So it's Saturday and day before Mother's Day, and I'm not going to talk very long today because we had two really special birthdays and people will want to congratulate them. Linda's meant a lot to me and to the group, and I've just gotten to know Eddie, and he has a special sense of peace about him. And what Linda mentioned about love, I mean, I've been studying the scriptures, and that's basically the great commandment is to love the Lord and love each other. And I think when I practice love, my days are good. And Eddie talked about choose. And, you know, I didn't have choice. I couldn't separate from my self-centeredness when I came in here. I had no choice. But now I do. I can see it, and I don't have to be that way. What a great gift. We're on this Steps We Took, and we're on page 21. And we're not going to finish it today because I want to leave plenty of time for discussion and to congratulate the birthdays, but we're going to probably not finish it. We're going to cover a little bit of it. There's so much information in this one chapter on understanding the problem. And this is by Joe McHugh, who started the Joe and Charlie Big Book Study. And some people sat down with him, 10, 15 years ago, and they let him talk about the steps, and then these writers put it together in this format. It's very powerful stuff. I think we owe a lot to Joe McHugh. When he started his Big Book Study, he got people connected back to the program. When we were in the late 70s, it was Treatment Center, and the fellowship was changing, but they kept it centered, like Linda was talking about. And it says on page 21, once we give up on a problem, any problem, and realize that we're powerless over it, then we can make changes in ourselves. So I can try to change other things, but if I'm powerless over it, I can't do it. So I have to change myself. And I can't make any changes in myself until I see that we're powerless, that I'm powerless. So until I see the truth of a situation, I can't take appropriate action. And he says, this is really the key. Until I realize means to suddenly see the truth of a situation that I'm powerless over it, whatever it is, I can't begin to believe on how it could be changed. I can't see the need to make new decisions, to make changes. I'm not willing to see a different path as long as I'm still pursuing my path over something I'm powerless over. Does that sound like people trying to get sober and themselves? Or with their own plan. We can't see any possibility of making new decisions or changes in our lives. So really, seeing that I'm powerless opens up the possibility to another solution, because I'm powerless to fix it. And it says, admitting our powerlessness is how we accept that we do have a problem and begin to discover what the problem is. So when I admit my powerlessness, then I can accept that there is a problem here that I'm powerless over, and then discover what the problem is. In some cases, we're going to find that there's a better action to take. We've been doing it the wrong way. In some cases, we may discover there's nothing we can do. We're powerless over the situation. In either case, whether we take a better action or admit that there's nothing we can do, we're in the road to recovery. I used to get a lot of terminal patients, and they would run out of reasonable options. And they would say, well, you know, I just can't stop. I have to do something. And I can understand their situation. And you have to sit and look at these people with some compassion and consideration, talk to them, and try to help them see the truth of their situation, which is not easy. And I use the Serenity Prayer as an example. I said, well, you can go, I could give you, there are other medicines in the pharmacy, and I could give you another drug, or you could go somewhere, someone will give you something. But I said, if you try to change something that you need to accept, then you're going to do harm. And if you're powerless over a situation and you try to change it, you're going to do harm. And they understood that, because it makes sense. And that would really happen. They'd go somewhere and get some treatment, and they'd have it would harm them, and they wouldn't get any benefit. It says so. And the other thing is, I can't take steps two or three till I take step one. And the process of step one then is twofold: to name the problem and to admit defeat. Now, What I've seen is people admit defeat, but they think that there's still time left in the game. You know, it's like the coaches who are they're behind by 15 points in a basketball game, and there's 2 minutes left, and they're still fouling. They're still fouling the other team to try to extend the game. They don't realize it's over. It has to be complete defeat. Game over. Even we're just willing to say it doesn't fit that way. He's talking about the round peg that he talked about in the other page last week. If we could turn around, even that simple statement is admitting defeat. If we humans could just realize, I like this, that there's only, this paragraph, there's only a short period of time that we're here. And the expanse of time, we're just an insignificant dot. Now, for alcoholics, we don't see it that way because we're the center of the world, right? We pick up an insignificant amount of information. We get a little bit of education. He says, but there's no way in a short period of time we're going to pick up enough information to run our lives. Now think about that. It wasn't a God's plan. God didn't create me to have all the knowledge in the world to be able to run my life. I think that's really true. He didn't create us that way. He created us to depend on him. If you could take all the knowledge and all the minds on the earth, and I wrote here, God's plan wasn't for me to run the show. Anybody... It took a while for me to learn that, and that was my plan. It didn't work. It says, if we had a significant percentage of the knowledge possible in the world, that super brain still would hardly know anything. It would be enormous relief if we would realize this. I need to act as if I don't really know. I don't know the answers. And I used to act as if I knew, and then I would make mistakes. This is not to say that we should not educate ourselves or learn as much as we can, but we have to realize that we'll never be everything or know everything. And when I judge things, I'm saying I know something. I make a judgment, I'm saying I know, and then of course my judgments are usually wrong, and they're based on some self-centered observation. When we realize our powerlessness, we can seek a source of power. I think that's such a simple statement, but it's the whole program. I think Eddie and said it really well. When we have no power, we need to seek a source of power. And I wrote, it can't be me. And it has to be a power. Hey, we read it today and how it works. There's one who has all power. We hope you find him now. Now, we call that God. And really, if you think about it, there's only one thing that can have all power. There can't be two things that have all power. And so we seek that which has all power. That's what we call God in AA. Sometimes the answer to our problem lies in a little bit of knowledge we do have. So we go ahead and use it. But often we run into problems completely baffling us, and then we must admit our powerlessness and turn to a higher power for assistance. And I wrote, God won't do for me what I could do for myself. And I have to choose to separate. But once I make the choice to connect, then God can do for me. And I've been listening to a lot of scripture and studying a lot. I surrender unto a power. I give that power, complete power. I'm not to it, unto it. Submit to it. We need to get this straight. We have the power. We have access to the power to solve any problem. We need any problems in our lives. Well, we just said we're powerless, so how can we have the power? Well, we have the power deep down inside of us, and we're going to study more agnostics starting next week, and it says the fundamental idea of God is deep down inside of all of us, but we obscure it, right, by calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. And it says in the final analysis, that's where he is. He's deep down inside of all of us, available to all of us. Remember, the highway is broad, all-inclusive, not exclusive. The road to God is open to all who seek him. And it says, any problem in my life. So we go back to the Serenity Prayer. And the Serenity Prayer, I always thought with, I would decide when I need to accept, and I would have courage to change, and then I would have the wisdom. But it starts with God. It starts with the God granting me serenity. And I look at serenity in this as the ability to see the truth because I'm connected to God. And I can't see the truth if I'm connected to me. And so I'll make bad decisions. I'll change things I need to accept and accept things I need to change. But with God and the serenity, I can have wisdom. And wisdom to me means truth. I cannot see the truth. If we can put every problem on one side or the other, a situation can either be accepted or it can be changed. And if we're powerless over it, we have to first accept it. And so you have to see the truth about a situation first before you can accept it. I couldn't admit I'm powerless over alcohol until I accepted I was an alcoholic. Remember, it says that's the first step in recovery. The delusion that I'm like other people has to be smashed. And if I'm, then we can do something about it. But if we have a situation we need to change and we're trying to accept it, when we're just making it worse. And the greatest truth in the Serenity Prayer is grant me from God, grant me wisdom to know the difference, to know which side to put it on. And you see, I can't see the Serenity Prayer on my own. I know that because look at my life. I tried to change a lot of things I needed to accept and accept a lot of things I needed to change, and I did not have wisdom, because I'll never have wisdom without God. And we talk about that. I say in the set-aside prayer, I need to see God's truth. I need to set aside everything I think I know and be able to see God's truth. And if I don't set aside everything I know, then I won't know. The Serenity Prayer won't make any sense to people who are looking at my actions. It might make sense to me, but it never leads to any useful result. We don't even know whether to accept things or change things, so we ask Him for the wisdom to know which is which. And he said, I spent a lot of my life trying to change things I should have been accepting, and trying to accept things I should have changed, but I was too stubborn to ask for help. Anybody relate to that? So, yeah, we're stubborn. We don't want to give up on our plan and our old ideas. And so we make our lives very unmanageable. Some way or other, all of us who are in the recovery process were given the wisdom to take that very first step. He's going to talk about that a little. The first step is a gift. The ability to come here at all is a gift. It's grace. And then there's a moment when I think everybody takes the first step, but then they can block it out very quickly. That's what I've seen the ego regrow. But I think if you truly take the first step with God and you see the truth about your situation, I think if you continue to seek God and stay in that truth, you'll be okay. And the steps are how we stay in that truth, how we stay connected to our first step. That's what separates us from those who are still out there suffering. We surely weren't capable of doing it ourselves. I didn't get down on my knee. I didn't wake up the day I surrendered and say, I'm going to surrender today. This is a good day. I'm going to surrender at 2 in the afternoon. I was a mess, and I was still trying to figure out. I mean, I just didn't want to. I didn't have any solutions. I really didn't want to go on anymore. It was just a mess. And then I finally gave up. I could see the truth. We talk about that a lot and how it works. Those who cannot or will not do this program, right? And they say those people are constitutionally capable of seeing honest with themselves. And why? Because they can't see the truth. And it says in the book of their hopeless and futility of life as they're living it. And they can't see that because they're disconnected from God. And so when they can't see the truth, so they're not going to do the deal. I work with a lot of people, and some it's such a blessing, and it fills me with such a positive spirit, and some it just drains me because they just won't take the first step. And I'm trying to work the steps with them, but then I realize they haven't taken the first step. And until you take the first step, you really can't help someone, and it's something that only they can do. Except if we've accepted the fact that we couldn't change without help, and we asked for help. Likewise, some of us for years tried to change a behavior, tried to become normal in that area, but we couldn't change. We give up and accept the fact that we're not normal, and our behavior changes immediately. Well, if you understand that you can't drink and you accept that fact, then you might try not drinking and doing the steps and going to AA and finding a solution for not drinking. We need to recall that God's will never enters where self-will dominates. Isn't this the whole steps? Face and be ridding of the things blocking me from God's will. Now I decide in step 3 that I need God's will, right, in my life, but I can't allow it to work if I'm in self-will. And we're going to talk about tomorrow in step 10 is where we look all day long where self-will is coming up and how we let go of self-will and turn to God. God's will automatically happen, like Eddie said, if I turn away from me. If I turn away from me and my my separation from God to God. That's all the omission of powerlessness. It is a shutting off of self-will in a particular area. Now, I can shut off self-will in one area of my life and keep it in another area, and then my life will still be unmanageable. For me, it's very easy. I know when I'm in self-will, I have fear. There's something I'm afraid of, something I'm worried about, something I'm anxious about. And then I'm just going to read two more paragraphs. We'll open up. Surrender usually means admitting we are powerless over this thing. Of course, it is very hard for us to do this. Alcoholics must stand powerful over alcohol, powerless over alcohol. Al-Anons, ACOA, stand powerless over people, places, and things. And as alcoholic, I'm power over people, places, and things, too. And you know, all of us could stand powerless over the obnoxious person at work or over the carburetor of my car. We have to surrender all these things to God. And here's a good one. I have to let go of the outcome. Now, why do they say that? I was thinking about that a lot. If I hold on to the outcome, then I'm still in control. And I looked up surrender, to give over, resign oneself to something. So we're going to give over. When we lay the gun down, we surrender to the people holding the guns, right? So when we surrender in AA, we're surrendering the powerlessness of our situation to power. And it's suggested in AA that once you surrender, you stay surrendered. And the reason we don't make it is because we don't stay surrendered. And I think that the only way I stay surrendered is to do the steps and follow through on the program. Because if I'm doing the steps, it means I'm surrendered that day. One thing I try to do every morning is, as soon as I wake up, before I start thinking about me or something, I try to say that prayer, God direct my thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. It's not the prayer itself that's so important. It's the idea that immediately I know I need to seek God. I don't want to run the world today. Now, a lot of people see surrender as a weakness, but those of us who've had some experience with surrender know that it's the way of true strength. We talk about that all the time. All the people who are remembered as successful military commanders, for example, had one thing in common. They knew how to surrender or retreat. Custer didn't, and MacArthur did. And then I told this story before, and then I'll shut up. But when the Japanese, Roosevelt did one thing on Pearl Harbor Day, the day he spoke to the nation. He said, we will have absolute victory. We will have absolute victory. I don't know the exact word, but he says this will be complete, total victory. We weren't going to stop. We weren't going to negotiate. We were going to have total victory. And so he set the terms of the battle. And then when the Japanese surrendered after we dropped the bomb and they went on that aircraft carrier, and I've seen films of it, MacArthur with his pipe and the American military, and then the Japanese with their tall hats and they're signing the surrender, and the Japanese guy, I don't know if it's true, but I heard the story, he gets the paper and he starts to put his glasses on, and MacArthur said, you don't understand, you don't need to read this. And I think if we understand that with our situation, it's unconditional surrender. And all we have to do it, and it doesn't matter what we think of the conditions, we have to follow them. Now, I did the third step with a couple people this week, and it says, once I decide that God's my director, good things are going to happen. And here's the conditions of my surrender. It says, God will give me everything I need, everything I need. And my condition is I have to stay close to him and do his work well. So there, I have a contract with God. And as long as I follow that contract, my life will be okay. And then there's other thing. The other thing in that contract is I give God worry. And so I give God my life. So we'll pick up and finish this because there's some really good stuff in the rest of this chapter. We'll start We Agnostics next week, okay? Congratulations again to the birthdays. It was really special. We'll open up now for people to share.